Der dicke Dachdecker deckte das dicke Dach. Dann trug der dicke Dachdecker die dicke Dame
Deadpan
durch den dicken Dreck. Dann dankte die dicke Dame dem
Deadpan
dicken Dachdecker, dass der dicke Dachdecker die dicke Dame durch den dicken Dreck
Deadpan.
Hey folks, today I'd like to talk to you about a podcast called Sofa Dogs. Have you ever purchased a DVD box set and were disappointed to find only a few audio commentaries or none at all? If the answer is yes, then this show is for you. We offer fan-recorded commentary tracks for a wide range of movies and TV shows, everything from Jaws to Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Excuse me, that's a terrible idea.
Stu, can you get off the line, please? I'm trying to record a promo for Sofa Dogs.
So I hear. All I can say is it's going to have to be a pretty damn good promo to get people to listen to you talk about blocking 60mm film and how James Marsters looks good in a red shirt.
Whoa, hold on a second. You know stuff about Buffy?
Of course. Way more than you, as it happens.
Do you want to do the show with me?
Sure, that could work.
Okay then, so head on over to sofadogs.libsyn.com and listen to John, and apparently Stu,
mostly Stu,
as well as other friends and passers-by talk about Buffy, Firefly, and whatever else happens to be in our DVD players.
Hey John?
Yeah, Stu?
This girl playing Buffy is hot. What's her name again?
Cool Whip.
I was out shopping during the holidays a few years back. I was at a Williams & Sonoma in downtown Minneapolis. While looking at some Le Creuset cookware, I suddenly felt pressure deep in my gut. I looked around and saw nobody directly nearby. Slowly, carefully, I released the pent-up pressure. Silent as death, it left me, and, judging from the slight burn of its departure, also smelling of death. Sure enough, my nostrils detected its foul presence around me, and I quickly absconded across the store, ostensibly to look at cutlery. Over by the Le Creuset display, some poor man got socked in the arm by his wife, who hissed, "Was that you?"
Deadpan is the motherfucking way.
Hey, this is Jack Mangan of the Deadpan Podcast and Spherical Tommy and, yeah, you know, all that stuff. In honor of T. Morris, I bring you now some dictionary definitions for T. 1. Noun. The 20th letter of the alphabet. As heard in the words timid, tremulous. Tell that guy to please stop harassing me to buy a copy of his book. Touching, trimmers for beards, titty twister, or Tim. 2. Noun. A small thin object to be wedged into the dirt, with a ball rested atop its flat head to be whacked off with a stick. 3. Noun. A kind of shirt. A t-shirt. As in, I bought Billabub Battings in the case of the pitcher's pendant, and all I got was this lousy tea. 4. Verb. To annoy the hell out of someone, i.e. to get them teed off, as if by excessive loud talking or over-exuberant behavior or self-promotion. And the 5th and final, a proper noun. A talented author and podcaster, a loving dad, and a good friend. Congratulations to T. Morris and P.J. Ballantyne for successful book launches.
Are you ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain.
I can't hear you!
Aye, aye, Captain. Gosh, asshole.
Oh! Who lives? isn't a pineapple under the sea.
Mangan's deadpan.
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he.
Mangan's deadpan.
If nautical nonsense be something you wish.
Mangan's deadpan.
Then drop on the deck and flop like a fish.
Mangan's deadpan. Mangan's deadpan. Mangan's deadpan. Mangan's deadpan. Mangan's deadpan. And sometimes we do haiku.
Nerd!
The Questers from FBM. A Serial. By Amy Bowen. Episode 2. The House of the Sophia Pulchra. John climbed out of bed and fumbled around in the darkened room, reaching out and feeling his way along the walls. He was looking for something, but he wasn't quite sure what it was. He knew that his mind wasn't entirely his own at this moment, but he also knew that there was something fascinating and very powerful in this house, and he simply had to find it and get to know it better. Right now. His fingers finally found a small knob shaped like a rose set into the wall. He hadn't noticed it when he had come in, because it had blended perfectly with the wallpaper. He turned it a half turn clockwise, and a panel opened almost noiselessly in the wall next to it, revealing a short, dark passageway. John hastily struck a match, lit a candle in a holder, and carried it with him along the hidden passage. At the opposite end was a door with a plain, round handle. He opened it and found himself in a large, rectangular library, filled with books, records, and CDs. When John closed the door behind him, he saw that the door on this side was disguised as another bookshelf. Directly opposite the hidden door was the only section of wall in the room that wasn't lined with shelves. Here, three objects stood against the wall. A crystal ball hung suspended in its wire basket on the left, the control unit for a stereo system sat on a low table on the right, and there, in the center, stood an ornate stone podium with a large, old, thick, leather-bound book resting on it. The book lay open, and a bright glow came from its pages, enough to illuminate the items on either side of it. The feeling of curiosity intensified here, surpassing the strongest lust. John had thirsted for knowledge and understanding before, but never like this. He knew that the glowing book held not only the most beautiful, euphonic phrases in the universe, but also a wealth of knowledge whose discovery would be a delight to the mind. Compelled by desire for those things, John crossed the room and began reading a page of the open book. He had never read anything so quickly before, and yet time seemed to be slowing down. Exquisite, profound knowledge poured itself into his mind. He couldn't look away from the wondrous words that stood out in smoldering, fiery letters on the page. He reached the end of the first page, then moved on to the next one. When he finished the third page, though, he began to feel that his mind could not possibly hold any more, and became very sleepy. He turned away from the book, walked back across the room, and found that he knew intuitively which book to pull down to access the secret passageway. Still carrying his candle, he returned to his room and fell into bed, sinking quickly into profound and cryptic dreams.
John, you in there?
It was morning, and everyone in the party was up, dressed, and ready to go downstairs for breakfast, except for John. Joe slowly and quietly opened the door to John's room. John was still asleep. Joe came over and stood near the bed.
John, time to get up!
Beta Tester 7.
John's eyes snapped open.
What? No, it's almost 8. Everyone's waiting for you outside. Breakfast is ready.
Mornington Crescent.
What are you talking about? Do you even understand what I'm saying?
Sukath, his eyes open.
Look, I don't know what's happened to you, but I'm going to help you sort it out. I'll go wait outside. You get dressed.
Joe left the room and explained the situation to the others, but they were all equally puzzled. Even Rhea found herself at a loss to explain John's outbursts of gibberish. When John finally came out of his room, the party went downstairs to talk to Andrea and Hugh, who were waiting for them in the dining room.
"Something has happened to our friend John. He woke up this morning speaking nothing but nonsensical phrases. Do you know what's going on?"
"There's almost always one," said Hugh. "Yes, we know what's going on. Don't worry, it's harmless."
"John must have read from the tome of the Sophia Pulchra," said Andrea. "All that collected beauty and wisdom we mentioned is represented by a book we keep in our library. It's a magic artifact powerful enough to have a mind of its own. When there are guests in the house, it usually summons one of them to the library to read from it." "Does this happen to you when you read from it?" asked Jeremy.
"No," said Hugh. "We're demons. No offense, but our minds lack some of the limitations that the minds of mortals have, so we can read it without ending up like John here."
"Will John be stuck like this forever?" asked Amy.
"No," said Andrea. "He's been exposed to a little piece of the mind of the cosmos, and it's temporarily overloaded his mental circuits. It'll take a few more hours for his mind to sort itself out. Then he'll be able to talk normally again. He'll also eventually manifest some kind of magical power. There's no way to predict what it'll be, though."
"I see," said Amy.
"Let's hope it's a good one."
Alvie and Addie had entered the room during the conversation.
"Somebody read the book again, didn't they?" said Addie approvingly.
"Yeah," said Jeremy. "How can you read that thing without going wacko?"
42.
"No, John, you're not wacko," said Alvie reassuringly. "In answer to your question, Jeremy, we're dead. We're permanent residents here, so we're able to read that book safely, just as Andrea and Hugh are."
"There are things man was not meant to know."
"Hey, you're starting to make sense again."
"Yes, he is. And he's right about that," said Andrea. "We're really sorry that this upset you, but please don't worry about John. He'll be the person you knew again in a few hours, just with some added powers."
"We said it was harmless," said Hugh.
"All right. I'll take your word for it. But if you're lying to me, beware."
"Fair enough."
There was more tension around the breakfast table than there had been at dinner on the previous night. Afterward, the questing party thanked their hosts politely, and then went on their way. Rhea continued to lead them along the road, deeper into what was evidently one of the more populated areas of the underworld. More buildings were visible now, including an obsidian pyramid with the words "Evil Incorporated" stamped into it in white letters. No one felt any need to stop there.
"I wonder what kind of ability John is going to end up with."
John was still occasionally muttering incomprehensible phrases under his breath.
"I don't know, but I sure hope it's something useful."
You have been listening to The Questers from FPM, a serial by Amy Bowen. Thanks to Ed from Texas, Paul Mackey, Just a Joe, Rhea aka the Energizer Bunny, and Jack Hosley for contributing their voices to this episode. The songs heard in this episode were Journey's End by Guardian Mind Mix, Falling Pieces by For Enemies of Reason, The Love Temple by Matt Mango, The Messenger by The Groove Mine, Mind Mixing by Blase Lindner, and Cats Sleeping on Clouds by Maneki Neko. All these songs except The Love Temple are available at the PodSafe Music Network. Sound effects provided by The Freesound Project at freesound.org.
This is Brad P. from NJ and the Whole Lot of Nonsense podcast at wholelotofnonsense.org, and
you're listening to Jack Mangan's Dead Band Podcast. Dead Band is the in way.
Oh, great. Gave myself the hiccups doing that.
Meow, meow, meow. 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 Fly.
Greasy Spoon comments. Knuckles cracking. John Bowes says, spitting and or, quotes, rearranging the furniture, ellipsis quotes. Yeah, I'd rather the White Sox weren't in, personally. Vanamon says, plus D. I shall now growl at my keyboard, dot dot. Grrrr. Vanamon says, Q, what's orange and sounds like a parrot? A, a carrot. Vanamon says, another useless tip. If you find an old open packet of sugar-free chewing gum in the pocket of a coat you haven't worn in months, do not be tempted to consume any of the gum, unless you like getting gunk on your hands. Just a Joe says, don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. And the sixth and final nipple comment of the week, Ditto says, yep, she's got a great voice for being bad, smiley face. Mouse click.
You ignorant simp.
Hello, here is Tozus in Germany with another random Wikipedia article page. Mouse click, random article as of Tuesday, the 16th of September at 10:12 p.m. Central European Daylight Time? Is it still daylight time? Anyway, random page. Mouse click. Once I find the link to random page. it's on here somewhere. Ah, found it. Marianne Gründer. Marianne Gründer, geboren 3. April 1907 in Posen, gestorben 1. März 1927, war eine hessische Politikerin aus der SPD und ehemalige Abgeordnete des Hessischen Landtags. Oh, right. This would be the German language version. Whoops. Let me try that again. Okay, mouse click. Let's see. n.wikipedia.org/wiki/main page. Here we go. Random article. Mouse click. Al Sorrentino, born May 25th, 1952, in New York City, is an American horror and science fiction author who has published, over the past 30 years, more than 40 books and 60 short stories. He has also edited numerous anthologies and has been called a master anthologist by Booklist. Interesting. See, things you learn that you never knew before. Let's see, Jack Mangan. There is no page titled Jack Mangan. Well, that's just wrong. I need to fix that. What if I just type in Mangan? Mangan, native name Mangan. Okay. Mangan is a town in North Sikkim in the Indian state of Sikkim. Appropriate, Sikkim. The town is connected to the capital Gangtok by a metalled road. Gangtok. Interesting. North Sikkim is the largest district of Sikkim in terms of area. The town lies in the geographic south of the district. After opening up the district, Mangan has witnessed a spurt in its economy in mostly tourism. The town opens up the Tibetan Plateau. Mangan also serves the towns of Lachung, Chungtang, and Lachem in the far north. Owing to its elevation, the town enjoys a temperate climate. Mangan calls itself the world capital of the large cardamom. So there you have it. Today's random Wikipedia and not-so-random Wikipedia article of the day has taught us that Mangan is the world capital of the large cardamom. This is Tozus in Germany, saying auf Wiedersehen.
Stolen from the deadpan. Deadpan.
Hey, Mr. Mangan. Got you some
content.
Fell out the back of the
deadpan.
Struck.
Lash move, no we don't got nothing to prove. Shattered shadooby. Boom, shalock, lock, boom. Ding-a-ding-dang, my dang-along, ling-long. Shout, shout, let it all out. Shine on, you crazy diamond. I'm just talking about Shaft.
Hello, this is John Klecko. Gosh, I'm nervous. Calling to tell Mr. Mangan what a great show he has. You have a great show, Mr. Mangan. Golly. And in the immortal words of Theodore Roosevelt, the worst of all fears is the fear of living. Great grooving peacocks. Isn't that the truth?
Mangan!
You've really got your shit together. Jack Mangan, you've got your shit together. Spherical Tome, 16 pieces at a time. Dirk Moonfire, each story is divine. Mangan, you've got your shit together.
Part of the problem is people aren't willing to actually just be single versus getting together with the wrong person. They feel, you know, I've known some women, they get to be, you know, 28, 29, and this clock starts ticking, and it's like, my God, I've got to get married. I'm going to be this old hag by myself with 500 cats in the house, you know. And guys get the same way, and it's like, why? You know, are you unhappy? And part of the problem is then they just, sometimes they'll settle for someone that they're not necessarily happy with. And I find in my experience too many people get married with sex first in their lives. Now, if that's important to the two of you, great. But the problem is if sex is the main reason why you've gotten together, sex is great. Oh, my God, she's hot. You know, or it's like, man, he is a hunk. And, man, this is great. Well, that's only going to last so long. And sex is going to become less and less important the longer you're together. And, you know, I've known many guys where they've hooked up with the hot chick at the bar, and then they ended up being together with them and marrying them, and then they're divorced 2 years later. And, I mean, so many of my friends have been divorced. It's amazing. And they ask me, Scott, how can you have been married for 12 years? You're still together. That's just amazing in this world. I said, well, I mean, I will say a lot of it's all luck. You never know who you're going to meet. But I didn't meet my wife in a bar. And, you know, she is very compatible with me.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of...
Jack Mangan's deadpan. Alright, the original plan was to just run this with nothing for me, because I just don't feel much like talking this week, but this is a full-length episode, and it's got no talking for me until now, and I'm doing such a great job right now. Big congratulations to Paul Fisher and Martha Holloway on the birth of Eliza Rose. That is a wonderful, wonderful bit of news there. Great people, and I wish the three of them all the best. Another good guy, P.G. Holyfield. That T. Morris bit earlier in this podcast, he had asked me to contribute something for a T. Morris roast. So that was my contribution. And anyway, that's about it. Thanks for being deadpan. No comments goal this week. Let's just go wherever it goes. We did make the comments goal the previous week, which was $4.99. Largely in part, not to everyone chipped in, but largely in part to the efforts of our friend Vanamond. So thank you very much, Vanamond, and thank you everyone. And hey, you know, if you're feeling shy, then don't. Feel free to jump in on the comments page. It makes me happy. I have a dearth of contributions. Holding on to a good long dumbass memory story from Kurt from St. George. But at the moment, that's about all I've got for the next episode. So please get me stuff. You know, the voicemail line, 206-350-TOMY, 206-350-8664, or email it to me, it's sphericaljackm@gmail.com. And that's it. This has been Deadpan. This has been Outro Babble. Good night, Mush. I'm not coming back after the music. Deadpan is the moth fucking way. No, that's not it.